This week, you've been hearing a number of perspectives on how Milwaukee became so starkly segregated and what can be done to change it.
This morning on Lake Effect, we examine the environmental aspects of segregation. WUWM's Susan Bentz offers two takes on the issue, beginning with a national overview. Jackie Patterson is the director of the NAACP Environmental and Climate Justice Program. She helped build that program from the ground up and works in communities around the country to engage African Americans on climate.
Patterson recently spoke at the Urban Ecology Center in Washington Park, and she begins here by sharing her approach in tackling environmental and climate justice issues.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that was clear from the beginning and that it continues to be clear is the need to help folks to see, whether it's environmental issues broadly and climate change specifically, how they connect to the everyday issues that are in our community. So how they connect to food, water, energy, like basically the commons, the things that to which we should all have access. Helping folks to make those connections and then helping folks to know how to have their rights met, you know, and their needs met in each of those areas in the context of the transition that we need to make in order to shift away from the practices that drive climate change while simultaneously preparing us for the fact that climate change is already here and affecting our communities. And so helping to frame the interconnectedness with all the different issues in society, and then helping to present a set of pathways, methods for change, whether it's starting local food movements, starting community-owned solar projects, starting recycling projects, etc. So helping folks to know how they can be a part of the change that we need to make.
So what propelled you into the work that you do?
I started off, you know, as a school teacher, and each thing that I've done, particularly as I was doing social service type things before, as a school teacher, as a social worker, as a international development worker, every time I've done those various things, it's been clear to me that whatever kind of problem or issue I've been working towards, there's a deeper systemic underpinning for it that needed to be addressed. Otherwise, it's just a Band-Aid, or we're just making things better for people who are vulnerable as opposed to removing vulnerabilities. And so with each successive leg in my career journey, I moved closer and closer to wanting to be a part of the systems change to eliminate the inequities as opposed to help people cope better within the inequities.
If you were to distill those systemic factors that make up environmental injustice, climate change injustice, what are those?
So, you know, not to sound like a commie, no, but it's capitalism is predicated on the notion that there has to be winners and losers, because capitalism means that you're capitalizing on something, and usually something is kind of the commodity and something is the entity that's capitalizing on it, and usually the commodity is either our natural resources or human labor. And so the way it's been done historically has been based on exploitation, domination, et cetera, and extractive ways of handling. So whether we're extracting people from Africa to come over as slaves, or whether we're extracting coal from the earth in these very damaging ways, whether we're mining it out and killing 76,000 coal miners since 1968 in the process, or whether we're blasting the tops off of mountains to get to something. So all the ways that we've been doing these things have been not only this kind of violent extraction, but you've seen the effects on people and on the planet. And that has all been towards kind of wealth generation for folks, while others have been kind of subject to, you know, that kind of reckless path of wealth generation. And so I think that, yeah, the way the structure of our democracy and moneyed interest, the fact that there's kind of this unholy marriage between moneyed interest and how decisions are made and what decision makers are in place. Certainly, as we talk about domination and exploitation of folks, it's, you know, it's certain communities and groups and populations that are exploited and dominated. Countries in the global south, women, people of color, low-income folks, and so, and low-income nations. And so as we see that, those are kind of the tools of domination and the and the and so whether it's racism, sexism, xenophobia, all of those are the systemic ways that we have seen climate change and other environmental justice proliferated, as well as other things, whether it's our voting rights being taken away or any number of these systems. And so those are the systemic underpinnings as far as I see them, for sure.
Over your tenure thus far, where do you see the most promise? Where is there progress happening?
There is progress happening in places where they have managed to make that shift. We're part of a group called the Climate Justice Alliance, where we have what's called the Our Power campaign, and the notion is power without pollution, energy without injustice. And through it, we've had successes throughout the country of people starting to go to collectively own community-owned solar gardens. People are starting people have been able to engage in campaigns that have resulted in coal plants being closed or shifting away from burning coal that's so harmful to communities. We have multiple communities we're working in where the communities were previously food insecure, and where now they have networks of gardens where they're growing their own food in their communities. And they have, for example, in Gulfport, a master gardener who has now apprentices who he's teaching to grow their own food as well, and they're being able to provide food to indigent community members there. So just the fact that people are starting to make this transition, even at the local level, even as federalism might not be as accommodating as we would like it to be now, we're still seeing people making advancements in terms of actualizing a vision of this transition we need to make at the local level. So that really gives me a lot of hope. Whether I go to Gulfport or Longview, Texas, or Black Mesa, Arizona, these are places where communities are really seizing our power, so to speak, and creating the change that they want to see in the world, even if it's only at the microcosm level as they build out. So
in these areas, are they situations in which races are coming together and propelling these programs, or is it a Black-driven process?
It's a combination. Definitely races are coming together, for sure. We had one of our Our Power gatherings was out on the Kayenta, Arizona, which on a Navajo reservation, and there it was folks from Appalachia in West Virginia coming together with folks from the Kentuckians from a Commonwealth organization, with both lower income white folks for the most part, coming together with folks from Black Mesa Water Coalition, which is again Navajo and other indigenous groups, coming together with the Eastern Michigan Environmental Action Council, which is African American and others as well, white American, Latina, folks from the from Southwest Workers Union, which is a largely Latino organization, all coming together around this banner of power without pollution, energy without injustice. So we're doing trans-local organizing where we're coming together to work on this collectively, even in our various locales, and even within various communities, you have kind of cross-racial, multiracial organizing that's happening around this.
What do you see happening in Milwaukee? What do we have something unique, perhaps not in the best sense, here?
That's a good question. So, I mean, of course, I don't live here, so I've only been able to say what I've seen. But I've seen some exciting organizing happening here, whether it's visiting these various urban ecology centers and seeing those centers have formal relationships with the schools, where they're including in the curriculum this kind of real hands-on connection with nature and understanding the role of our role within the ecosystem, and how we need to be active and intentional about fostering harmony with nature in order for us to be able to have a sustainable place of habitation. And so seeing that is really very exciting. It seems to be a model of urban ecology centers that exist here that I would love to see replicated in other places. That's unique and fabulous. I am also seeing the coming together of, so that's on the positive side in terms of advancing, but even in terms of the coalition that came together to address the coal plant that's here in downtown Milwaukee, or the situation with the lead in the water, the coalition of folks who are coming together from all walks of Milwaukee society, education, health, civil rights, all coming together to protect the well-being of the community. So I see a lot of good kind of intersecting, you know, efforts that are fighting against the bad and advancing the good. So that's very encouraging.
Why do you think can't people, good people, have come together sooner to avoid what seems in some cases to be just sort of so entrenched that it seems all more the challenge to dig out of?
So I think when it comes to environmental issues, I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying in the very beginning, that so many of that we as a society tend to be fairly siloed. Like, we think of this as about being about this and this, you know, not being about this, when it's really all the same thing, you know, as illustrated through that story just around kids and school in general, I mean, specifically. So I think it takes a while for us to get out of our silos, I guess, is the point there. So whereas there probably has been activism on this or that topic, but not necessarily the coming together of folks from different sectors recognizing that everybody has a stake in an issue like a coal plant. Like, so in the past, it might have been just enviros working on that, but now everyone recognizes that intersection in a more tangible way. So I think it took us having that greater understanding, because even the enviros or the green folks have come a ways in terms of recognizing that they just can't be in, you know, talking about flora and fauna or rivers and streams and so forth, that they need to be able to talk about themselves about it in an intersectional way. So I just think we've evolved in our understanding and the way we talk about these challenges in a way that's made it more accessible for people to feel like this is my struggle as well.
So if somebody asked you to write a prescription for Milwaukee, could you do it?
No, mostly because, I firmly believe in the Jemez principles that all organizing needs to come from the people who are. So I think Milwaukee, if you get folks, Milwaukeeans together in a room, they would be able to say what they need in terms of change. When I got together with the Flint community after the water crisis and we sat down, we had a series of visioning sessions. Like, it's not like I came in and said, you should do this or you should do that or you'd be able to. Like, they came up with all of the ideas of it, and I was literally just a scribe. And there's nothing that I added there that they didn't already know themselves. And so my role then became like, okay, you want to do this? Here's some resources of how you might be able to do this. So you want to do that? Here's some technical assistance. But they knew what they wanted and what they needed. And I think Milwaukee's probably in the same boat. It just needs that, you know, and then the best people to prescribe the solutions for Milwaukee is Milwaukee, you know, for sure.
This is a simplistic and last question, but, you know, when you consider that Milwaukee is a segregated city, if that segregation dissolved with time, could that in itself be part of the solution?
It's interesting because I actually wrote this paper recently called Diversity is Not Enough, and done alone it can be counterproductive. because I guess the question would be how that segregation is achieved, you know, because that's all, you know, the devil's definitely in the details and so are the angels. And so it just really needs to, like, it's really kind of what are the underpinnings of the segregation, and are those underpinnings eliminated? That's why it's no longer segregated, or is it, you know, busing, or, you know what I mean, some kind of artificially imposed technique. And so it's really, so when I wrote that article, it was about saying it's not just adding more, you know, crayons, you know, colors to your crayon box. It's about eliminating racism, or really having an anti-racist or anti-oppression frame instead of, and then the diversity will come as you develop an anti-oppression frame and the oppression kind of sets operations and ethos. And so similarly, yeah, it really needs to be getting at why it's segregated, why it's continued to be segregated, you know, even as times change. And yeah.
So anti-oppression is strong term.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, because I was I'm going to speak at this school in a campus in a few weeks in a rural area, and they were telling me as we were doing a prep call for it. They said they sent out a survey on multiculturalism and diversity on their campus, and somebody wrote back and said, you know, why do we have to do this crap? You know, we're a white Christian college. We need to just own this. Why do we need to change it? And so it would not be a good thing to then start kind of doing a big recruitment and bringing folks in, because who knows what will end up painted on the side of their dormitory once they come there, or worse, you know? So there would need to be the work. Like, people would need to commit to anti-oppression and anti-racism before you would want to have people come in there in that setting. I'm not even sure what's going to happen when I go there. So, right. Hope springs eternal.
That's just part of what NAACP Environment and Climate Justice Director Jackie Patterson had to say. You'll find more of our conversation at WUWM.com.
As Susan Bent said, you'll find more of her conversation with environmental and climate justice expert Jackie Patterson on our website and all of WUWM's Project Milwaukee coverage at WUWM.com.